this is Ron.
And I'm Stephanie.
Welcome to my marathon quest.
We've got special guest Chris Mosier with us.
I think folks are really going to like our show today. It's about being yourself and following your dreams.
So speaking of following your dreams, this is our first My Marathon Quest, and we're so excited to share it with you.
That's right. So this has been a dream of mine to have the show for a while, to have the show focused on marathon training, about transforming your life, and kind of almost like an adventure show too, where we go on and do races in different parts of the country and the world. So I'm really excited and pumped about doing this.
Awesome. And why don't you tell folks where your inspiration came from for this?
So my inspiration was a show called Marathon Training Academy. It's with Angie and Trevor. I'm a big fan of their show. They do race recaps. They also do interviews from people in the industry, the running industry, and training tips as well.
Awesome, awesome. And that sounds like a lot of kind of what we want to do too.
I think we want to be the Brooklyn Latino version
yes,
of that show.
That's right. You know, when you're, you know, deciding to run a marathon or a half marathon, a lot of work and planning is involved. And we wanted to be able to share kind of tips and pointers for folks who are going to embark on that journey. With your help, I've been able to start at a 5K and work my way up to a couple half marathons now. Yeah, how's it for you to run marathons and half?
I think what's really great about marathons is it could be a really life transformational experience, something that could really make you feel that you could do anything in the world that you put your mind to. So I think that's what's one of the things that's really special about doing marathon training. And it's why I want to do, part of the reason why I want to do this is because I want to be able to motivate us to do that, to have some adventure in our life, to go out there and do marathons in different places in the country, in the world, and also to encourage other people to have that experience as well, to really, you know, if you ever thought to yourself, you know, maybe one day I would like to do a marathon, but I'm a little bit worried about, you know, the distance and whether or not I could do it. Well, you know, this is part of the reason why I want to do this, is so that people can feel inspired to do it and to do it in a way that makes sense and that's safe and that's really promotes their health and their fitness and a little adventure in their life too.
That's right.
So we'll get a little bit more into the details about marathon training and all of that and why even run a marathon in future episodes. For now, let's get into our interview with Chris.
A lot of you folks already probably are familiar with Chris from his Nike commercial, Unlimited Courage.
Yeah.
And
it's a pretty cool commercial.
It's a great commercial. So what do you think if we show folks?
All right, so check it out.
This is Chris Mosier. Morning, Chris.
Morning.
Chris is the first transgender athlete to make the men's national team. Hey, Chris, how'd you know you'd be fast enough to compete against men?
I didn't.
Or strong enough?
I didn't.
Yeah, but how'd you know the team would accept you?
I didn't.
Or that you'd even be allowed to compete?
I didn't.
That must have been tough. Didn't you ever just want to give up?
Yeah, but I didn't.
So that's a pretty cool commercial.
Yeah, I think that commercial's awesome.
You want to tell folks a little bit more about Chris?
Yeah, so some background on our guest today, Chris Mosier. Chris Mosier is an athlete, coach, and educator, and the founder of transathlete.com. In 2015, he became the first openly trans man to make a men's U.S. national team. Following the national championship race, he was instrumental in getting the International Olympic Committee policy on transgender athletes changed. And in June of 2016, he became the first transgender athlete to compete in a world championship race under the new rules, where he was the second fastest American man in his group. Chris is a two-time member of Team USA, representing the United States in the short course and long course duathlon, which is a run, bike, run event. Chris is also a nationally recognized three-time Ironman athlete. Chris won a silver medal in triathlon at the 2014 Gay Games. He is a Nike-sponsored athlete, and he's also the Vice President of Program Development and Community Relations for You Can Play. We're going to be picking up the interview here with Chris, letting us know about a really exciting accomplishment he's had this past month.
Last month, I made the triathlon national team.
Nice.
So representing USA in Netherlands next year.
Ooh,
yeah. Wonderful.
Excited.
So what was your journey like to become an elite athlete? I mean, I think so many people don't
having a clue what's involved with it, and there were so many barriers that you had to overcome. So what was that journey like for you?
Yeah, so I started doing triathlons in 2009. So mm-hmm. I have not been doing this my entire life. I started off kind of as a runner before that and worked my way up from a 5K. So very, very beginning running. And I'd always been an athlete in school, three sport athlete in high school, played rec sports in college. But I took this big chunk of time off after college. And I think part of that was me figuring out who I was as a person and also recovering from some health issues. And so, it was really building my way back up from 1 mile. I was in Chicago at the time and I saw a Chicago Marathon banner and I said, I want to do that. And people looked at me like, you're nuts. Like, you can't even run a mile right now. The fastest way to get me to do something is to tell me how to do it. Hey, I'm going to do it. So really, I used that as my motivation to work my way up and progress. So, it was the 5K, and then New York City has a lot of 4 mile races. So 4 mile races, 10K races, half marathons, and then finally worked my way up over the course of, it's probably 3 years of running to that first marathon. And then after that, I was like, well, what's the next step? How can I push myself even further? And for me, that was, all right, let me push myself way out of my comfort zone, buy a bike, and teach myself how to swim and see if I can do a triathlon. And so I won my category in my first triathlon, and I was like, yes, wow. And, from there, it just kind of snowballed. But, corresponding to that was my sort of understanding my own identity as being a transgender man. And so at that time, I started off competing in triathlons as a woman, and I never really identified as a woman. So I was really conflicted with both my running races and the tries of saying, so I won my category in that race, which was awesome, but I didn't want to share that with people because it was in the women's category. I didn't win the race overall. So, I was really kind of faced with this position where I had to figure out, okay, are you going to be comfortable in the rest of your life and maybe give up sport? Or are you going to, push off who you know yourself, who you know that you are inside, and try to continue this athletic career? And it ultimately came to, I had to make a decision of transitioning was the right option for me, taking testosterone, which switched my competition category. But also, there are not a lot of policies at that time, this was 2010, for transgender athletes out there. And so I wasn't even sure if I'd be able to compete. And so, it was this whole journey of trying to find out the policies and switch my categories with places like New York Roadrunners and local races and, making sure that I would be able to continue the sports that I love. And I wasn't sure that I would be competitive after that. And so I think, again, that would be the motivation for me right there of people saying that I would just be a middle-of-the-pack guy. Okay, you were a good female athlete, but now you're just going to be a middle-of-the-pack guy. If we just pull you over, you have no chance of competing against men.
And that was the wrong thing to say again.
That was pretty much the right thing to say. Every single day I think about this, and I will until the day I die. I use this as my motivation every single day. In 2011, there was a New York Times piece that came out, a feature of me, and it was my first big press thing. Really great, super cool photo, the full back page of the sports section. I was so pumped. But the whole article was about me kind of being a middle-of-the-pack guy. I had done New York City Tri in 2009 as female, did it in 2011 as male. And, I get where the author was coming from, but it was really like, the words middle of the pack do not belong in the same sentence as
mine. You hear that?
I actually had the good fortune of talking to that reporter many years later for another article that came out, and we had a whole conversation about, he knows that he's my drive every single day.
Amazing. So some good actually came out of his categorization of you.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think with that is also the good of just being able to flip all of that upside down. Every people's perceptions of who is a good athlete, what makes a good athlete. A lot of what we see in sport, like for me, I wasn't facing a lot of transphobia. There was some transphobia that I was facing and people making comments and barriers to my participation through policies. But a lot of it was just sexism, plain and simple, of people thinking that someone who was designated female at birth, who was assumed to be female at birth, could not be competitive against men. And so, you know, I also have a bit of that drive in me to say, you know, while there were no trans men that I saw when I was transitioning who were competing against men, you know, here I am now. You can see my Nike commercial. You know, I'm on Team USA. All the other, you know, little trans kids out there now have somebody to look to say, yeah, this is possible. You know, and other people can see, all right, let me really think about what makes a good athlete and how this works out.
You mentioned the Nike commercial. It's a really incredible commercial.
Thank you.
They ask all these questions. Chris, how did you know you were going to make the national team or something?
I did it.
And so it's very inspiring. It's a very inspiring video and an ad that Nike has about you. So what is it that, what do you, I mean, you mentioned a little bit now some of the things you draw upon to kind of confront these things, because I think a lot of people would be intimidated by these types of challenges or scared to kind of pursue things. And so you were kind of dealing with multi layers of this. People saying, oh, you'll only be a middle of a packer competitor, but also just dealing with the whole being open about this and also trying to challenge the rules too. Like so you draw, it sounds like you draw somewhat on people saying, oh, you can't do it. Are there other things that you draw upon in terms of?
Yeah, I think I draw upon my own discomfort. And I think in a bigger way, what I think about is being the person that I wish that I had 10 or 15 years ago. And so while I did not start this journey thinking about other people, and the process of transition for me, certainly, and for many people, is a very selfish trend of like moment in time for them. Like my, you know, my partner dealt with a lot because there was so much internal and self focus that I had as I tried to figure out my own identity, which then in turn made me a better partner, a better you know, friend, a better you know, employee, all parts of my life. But you know, for that period of time, it was very much about me, and it had to be for me to kind of figure out how I could exist in this world. I think that I draw my inspiration then from thinking, I just wish that I had somebody that I could have talked to during that process. You know, I was 29 years old when I made the decision to transition, and I didn't see other people doing what I wanted to do. And I think we all have this sort of deep down desire to see ourselves reflected back in some sort of position of success or the place that we want to be. You know, and so for me not to have that mirror, to not have that community that I could have gone to, you know, this is, it's a funny thing. I lived in New York City and I didn't know trans people in real life. Like, I wasn't talking to them. I didn't have that in-person community. There was no one that I could say, hey, I'm thinking about this. You know, I'm not just coming up to my random friends in my tri club and saying, do you have a minute to just talk about gender? We weren't just talking about things like that. So, you know, there was that process. And I just knew that when I made the decision to come out publicly, and I will say that was a long decision to make. It was, you know, I thought a lot about that. I had a lot of therapy sessions about, you know, thinking through it, because that's a one-time decision. You only make that choice once with the internet now, right? I will forever be the trans athlete. And there was certainly a period of time where I just wanted to be a regular guy. You know, can I just be out there and just compete against men and be another dude and not have to have that label attached to me? But I realized the significance and the impact that that label can have because we so severely lack that trans male visibility in sports and in many cases sort of in society, that we have now some prominent trans women who have pushed forward the conversation so greatly, but we were really lacking a trans male voice and someone specifically in sport. And so I knew it was new territory, and that was what drove me to, you know, I got my coaching certification so that I can be a better athlete. I kind of wanted to coach other people. It was kind of selfish. I just wanted to know, how can I be better? You know, and then I got a really great coach, and, you know, how can I make the national team? How can I push forward the next limit? It really didn't happen until the last year, and the last year has been phenomenal for me. You know, it was the first year of, I made the national team in 2015. 2016, I competed in the World Championship, but also through the process of that, worked to get the International Olympic Committee policy changed, which impacts so many people. 70 plus organizations now have their policies in theory changed. Not all of them changed on paper yet, mm-hmm. but I'm working on that. You know, it enabled me to participate in the World Championship, and then there was a lot of visibility with ESPN, the body issue. You know, if you pose naked in a magazine, you get a little bit of attention. If you're a trans person, there's a lot of attention. Mm-hmm. And then the Nike ad. So, you know, this year has really been that shift for me of, you know, it's really cool to, I can walk around and people say hi to me on the streets. Like, that's a really weird thing. Even just hearing you read my bio is really weird.
Like, oh, I know that person.
Wow, that's
cool. Yeah. It's like, impressive,
right? It took me by surprise sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I think now I'm in a position where people do come up to me at mm-hmm. races. Now I'm doing a lot of speaking. And so I speak, you know, can do personal speaking, but also in my role as vice president at You Can Play, I'm going to colleges and universities and talking about inclusion in sport. And so, you know, it's really just an opportunity to reach so many people, and everyone has a story. Everyone has some sort of connection to the community.
A lot of our listeners are just starting to run or thinking about this, doing in, perhaps an endurance sport like marathons. What advice would you have for them as beginners in terms of training advice or just, you know, general advice?
So my favorite new phrase that I use with everybody that I work with, and I really love working with beginning athletes and getting them attached and getting them a love of the sport. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the most rewarding things that I've done as a coach mm-hmm. is really work with, you know, I love sending people to championship races and you know, getting podium placements, but I think really getting somebody to do their first event mm-hmm. and fall in love with it is the most rewarding thing for me. Mm-hmm. My phrase that I use with everyone right now is progress is a process. Mm-hmm. And so really just embrace the journey mm-hmm. of what you're about to do. Training for a marathon is a time-consuming, really intense commitment, mm-hmm. and it's a journey, mm-hmm. you know, and it is something that you fully commit to and have to embrace along the way. And you're looking at, if you're doing it the right way, right, you're looking at least 12 weeks, and that's going to alter your life in a lot of ways mm-hmm. in terms of social life and rest and how you're eating mm-hmm. and how you're thinking about your time commitments and planning mm-hmm. your long runs, right, mm-hmm. and things like that. So I think that embrace that process mm-hmm. and understand that we all were beginners at some point. Mm-hmm. You know, those people who are winning the races also were in your shoes at some point in time. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, be patient with yourself and mm-hmm. just allow yourself to really enjoy the process. Mm-hmm. The secret.
What's the secret, Chris? We all want to know the secret.
There's my catchphrase, right? Yeah. Progress is the process. But the secret is consistency. Mm-hmm. And so while you might not feel like doing it every day, it's really how we show up every day that makes the difference. And so you hear this idea of weekend warriors. Mm-hmm. You know, weekend warrior marathoners get hurt. Mm-hmm. You do that mm-hmm. for endurance sports. You get injured. It's not safe. Mm-hmm. So it's really about changing your lifestyle, mm-hmm. right? Incorporating this as a part of your lifestyle. You just go for a run. Mm-hmm. And so while it's planned out and you have your training sessions and whatnot, like, mm-hmm. that's really the thing. I always say, you know, put your clothes on, get out there, give yourself 10 minutes. If you feel awful, you don't feel like doing it, you had a long day, you're tired, whatever, mm-hmm. I think running changes your perspective mm-hmm. totally.
Definitely. Yeah.
You know, so go out there, commit mm-hmm. to doing at least 10 minutes of that. Mm-hmm. If you feel like awful and horrible at the end of 10 minutes and you want to bail, cool, do mm-hmm. it. You showed up, you were consistent for that day. Mm-hmm. But chances are you're going to get out there, you're going to finish the workout.
Yeah. So. That gives me hope because, number one, you said that there was a point in time where you could barely do a mile. So, but for me, I find that actually getting outside is the hardest part.
Yeah,
totally. So I'm going to use Chris's motto.
That's great.
Just put the stretch pants on and get out there.
You have to have, you know, there are little tricks that you can do to make mm-hmm. yourself do that. And I think, I'm a morning workout person that preferred, because if I don't get it out of the way in the beginning of the day, my day is packed. Mm-hmm. A whole lot of other things can happen. If I skip lunch because I'm too busy, I'm not going to have the energy to run after work or at mm-hmm. night. And I'm not going to feel like going back out when it's dark, you know, when we're in the winter months, it's dark at 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to feel like being out there at mm-hmm. six when it's cold. But in the morning, 6 a.m. is a different story, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you can knock it out before the rest of your day starts, mm-hmm. that's it. I mean, if you finish nothing else, you accomplish nothing else for the rest of the day, you got that run. You're off to a great start.
I like that.
And so I think, you know, setting out your gear the night uh-huh. before, mm-hmm. I always do that. get up and put it on.
I'll sign for it.
You know, do what you have to do so that you get that workout in. Mm-hmm. And I think the morning is the easiest time to do that.
Yeah. So that's kind of how you manage it with all your other responsibilities. Besides running, what's your training look like? What's the typical training week look like?
So I'm in the off season right now. I'm kind of doing a build for next year. I don't think my first race is actually until May. So mm-hmm. I have 5 good months of training, which I'm really excited about with my coach, mm-hmm. Which we started in maybe February of last year. So this will be our first full off season mm-hmm. together. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm tired, but I'm excited. because right now it's, you know, for my training, it's swimming, biking, running, and strength training. And so last week I did 14 hours of training. And this is, you know, for professional athletes, that's not a lot, right? That's their job. But this is not my job. I also do full-time advocacy work and travel a lot. And so, you know, that was a big week for me. And it's mm-hmm. just going to build from there. So that's why it's really important to incorporate it into mm-hmm. your life in a way mm-hmm. that fits. You know, if I'm doing 2 or 3 workouts in a day, I really have to be strategic about, you know, you have to get out of bed and do that one in the morning, because otherwise you're going to be in rough shape in the afternoon.
Do you have any exercises you do, not necessarily for training, but for mental health or just pure enjoyment? I mean, swimming is pretty fun, but I don't know if you do yoga or
swimming's not fun.
No?
I'm actually just starting to like swimming.
Oh, that's interesting. My, okay.
favorite thing. But also, I mean, you have to think, like, for swimming was the area that I struggled the most with as a triathlete and probably pushed me the most, because navigating the pool as a trans person was really tough.
Right.
And so starting the race, you know, starting to race and train as female when I didn't feel comfortable with my body, didn't feel comfortable showing up in a women's swimsuit, didn't feel comfortable in the restrooms and locker rooms, so where could I change? I actually swam here at NYU, and they had a tented area on the side of the pool deck, so I'd take a sneaky side door into the pool deck, because otherwise you enter through locker rooms.
Mm.
And so I'd get changed there, stick my stuff on the bleachers. You know, it was a big ordeal mm-hmm, yeah. to go swimming, and so I think that I still carry a little bit of that with me even now. But I'm starting to like it. In terms of exercise that I do just for fun, I'm really super active, so I would, you know, I'd love to do anything that I have time for. I love bowling.
Nice!
For fitness and for health. There was a place I used to go to that had that on the wall for fitness and for health. And
nice!
We'd go bowling there. I would love to go rock climbing, but I haven't done that recently. And my new thing that I have kind of in my mind for summer is to get a stand-up paddleboard.
Ooh. Nice. Oh, I've never tried one of those before. They look awesome.
Yeah.
They look awesome. Yeah. Well, next time you're in town, if you can come to Brooklyn, we'll take you rock climbing.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's a rock. What's it called?
Boulder.
Okay. Yeah. You know.
Oh, okay. Have you been there?
No, not yet.
Can you tell us a little bit more before we wrap up about You Can Play?
So You Can Play is an amazing organization that the premise of it is, if you can play, you can play. So it's such a simple message, but we believe that athletes should be judged based on their skill and ability and their competitive nature and their desire to participate, and not based on their gender identity or their sexual orientation. And so, you know, all athletes should have the opportunity to compete in a safe, inclusive, and respectful environment. And so the work that we do is really going into sports leagues, teams, organizations, and just spreading that message of respect. And so we talk a lot about casual homophobia and the impact of the language that we use. And if you just think about the words that people use in sport, then it's not as prevalent in running and endurance sports. And I will say that I've had a great experience in endurance sports, and really from the top down. Competitors have been fantastic with me, and you know, if guys I beat in races and find out that I'm trans have been very super cool about it, and you know, really respectful. And the organizations, you know, USA Triathlon has also been really supportive of me,
nice.
And I'm grateful of that. But in team sports, if we're talking about, you know, those sports that really value masculinity, the language that is used in that just casually by coaches, fans, and players is so incredibly problematic. And if you think about what sort of impact language has on shaping spaces and experiences, it really, it leads to the fact that we don't have a lot of out professional athletes in men's sports.
Yes.
And a lot of that is tied together. And so we're trying to disrupt that, to spread this message of awareness and inclusion that, you know, if you can play, you can play. And we want to make sure that all people have access to sport.
You know, I recently was talking to a friend of mine who used to play high school football.
Yeah.
And one of the things he said was his coach, he would say, you're running like a girl. You know, so that sort of thing. It was like, that was supposed to meant to make the guys feel like, I guess, more motivated or like a reprimand. And it, so it's, I would imagine it, there's a lot of that sort of thing.
Absolutely. Also, what's wrong with running like a girl?
Yeah. And this goes to the fact that we need to really evaluate what we think of as a good athlete and what are the qualities and skills that we value in athletes. And I know a lot of women who are faster than me and faster than a lot of men. You know, I know women who can outbike me and outswim me, and you know, we all come with a different set of skills and background. So we really have to think about that. You know, if I tell you to think of the best athlete in the world right now, you know, if you don't tell me Serena Williams, you're wrong. Right? But what most people do is immediately go to their Rolodex of male athletes and go, okay, is it LeBron? Is it this football player? Is it this other person? Right? And so it's not that those are not female athletes, they're athletes. And we have to start to think about putting that all together. You know, the homophobia in sport is so incredibly tied to sexism. So we're trying to break up all of that.
If people want to get in touch with you or find out more information about you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, so thank you for asking. So I run a website called transathlete.com, and it's a web resource for athletes, coaches, administrators, fans, whoever, to find out transgender policies in athletics, and they're ranked by organization, high schools, and whatnot. So I do a lot of my side work there, and there's a page about me on there that folks can get contact information. So transathlete, just singular, .com is the best way. Or they can contact me through You Can Play at chris@youcanplayproject.org. And I should say, I actually want people to contact me on Instagram.
You know, I do follow you on Instagram.
And the Chris Mosier, if you need workout motivation.
We're so thrilled that you could join us today. I feel like I got some good motivation for my own novice running program. And certainly a lot to think of as far as, you know, the intersections that you're confronting as far as gender, sexual orientation, sexism in the industry. So I feel really happy about the advocacy that you're doing.
Thank you.
And
it's very inspirational,
and
Chris.
Serena, if you're listening, we would love to have you come join us. We'll have Chris back and we'll have a chat. But otherwise, we really encourage our listeners and our viewers to check out your Instagram and to check out You Can Play as well.
And transathlete.com.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And the biggest thing is just show up. I mean, this is a journey. We're all at different places in our journey, in both in sports and in life. The biggest thing is showing up, right? Just get out there and do what you want to do.
I love it. What an inspiration. Thank you.
Especially on a cold, rainy day. Right? Yeah.
I love the rainy days the most because I feel the most badass. You know, there's something really special about getting it done when you know other people are sleeping in.
Yeah.
Right?
Juan made me go running once at like 5 a.m. and it was -3 degrees. And I'm not normally the person to do that, but I felt like a freaking superhero. So that's, I totally see what you're saying. Yeah. So thank you for being badass.
Thank you so much, Chris, for doing that.
So we hope you enjoyed that interview with Chris.
Yeah, it was a blast to tape it.
I think one of the things I really got out of that interview was really to have the courage to follow your dream and to be who you are, regardless of what other people may think or say. And, you know, that takes a lot of courage to do that.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And I think, too, what I really am walking away with is the importance of consistency, mm-hmm. and also really having your eye on the big picture and kind of making sacrifices, knowing that there's mm-hmm. a big reward at the mm-hmm. end. So, mm-hmm. so if folks want to get in touch or watch some more of our shows, you can find us at mymarathonquest.com. We have a YouTube channel with the same name, My Marathon Quest, and you can also listen to our podcast, their recording of our interviews, on SoundCloud as well, under My Marathon Quest.
So if you visit our website, you'll find out a little bit more about programs that we're launching in January as well.
Yeah, so we hope you'll check them out, and we look forward to meeting you guys, and we hope you enjoyed today's show.
All right, stay tuned. Benya.